We're taking your calls for African American listeners specifically for this next half hour. Want to hear what your multitude of emotions and thoughts are about what we've seen over the past several days. We're at 866-893-KPECC or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. Joining me is Pastor J. Edgar Boyd, Senior Minister at the First African Methodist Episcopal Church of Los Angeles. Been around nearly 150 years. Pastor Boyd, thank you for being with us.
Good morning. Glad to be here, Larry.
So first of all, the mix of emotions that you're feeling after these past several days.
The past several days have really been a revelational experience for all of us in the nation. And Black people have felt it at heart because they have for so long lived through the dread of racism, of oppression, and of injustice. And this kind of a double-barreled approach, understanding that we've been in sequester and stay-at-home orders across the country now for the 11th week, going into the 12th week. And to have this heinous event that took place on the life of George Floyd by Derek Chauvin just was a tipping block or tipping rock on the scale, and it turned things around. So people are now expressing their discontent with justice, expressing their discontent with the two standards that exist in America, one for whites and one for blacks. And that's not something new that's been with us now over the 400 years that African-Americans or black people or Africans have been present on this continent in North America.
I would assume. Oh, I'm sorry, Pastor, go ahead.
Happening, I think, for the good for the nation as well as for black Americans.
We're talking with Pastor J. Edgar Boyd, Dr. Boyd, Senior Minister at First AME in Los Angeles. I would assume that you have members of law enforcement in your congregation, police officers, people who work elsewhere in the criminal justice system. What sorts of congregational conversations do you have, given the tremendous challenges between law enforcement and the African-American community, and that you undoubtedly have people part of your congregation who are part of that system?
We've always said that African Americans in law enforcement would be the best reflection and the best evidence of any opportunity or injustice that's possible through law enforcement for the black community. People ought to be able to protect and serve the communities that they come from, or the communities ought to be able to see that those who are in law enforcement areas, law enforcement organizations, actually serving their community, who look like them. That makes a big difference. There's only a small amount of rogue or dishonest or non-integral law officers who are in law enforcement across the country, and they are besmirching the reputation and the name and the honor of law enforcement as a whole. And we have African-Americans, we have black persons in our congregation who own literally every branch of law enforcement here in Southern California, CHP, LAPD, the sheriff's office, LAX, the police department, the whole gamut.
And
we work with these institutions every year in staging training opportunities for young blacks and African-Americans to be involved and engaged. So we get that. That's not a problem. But what we have now seen, the law enforcement community, the policemen's union, and the policeman commission, who have had a difficult time in bringing justice to families that have been victimized by the excessive force expressed by a small percentage of law enforcement officers.
Pastor Boyd, do you think that the killing of George Floyd is a tipping point that will bring significant change to policing?
If we are to survive as a nation, it will bring it about. This is the testing point for the nation. We've seen waves of change and waves of opportunity for change in this nation. Perhaps the first of them would have been the Revolutionary War. The next of them would have been the Civil War, then Reconstruction. From that, the Jim Crow era. From that, the landmark decisions with Tracy, all the way down the line, starting back up with the ones that have really been decided against us on many fronts, and then the ones that have been decided in our favor. So those happen, and then there's the whole matter that came along with the civil rights movement. And then we went from there to the other upheavals. We all remember the one in 1992 that happened here in Los Angeles with Rodney King. This one now is bigger than any of them, because it had expressed itself completely across the fabric and the territory of North America, of America. So if we don't get this one right this time, if we don't make the change and make the reformation and mitigation that we need to do now, we might not have this chance as a nation again.
Thank you very much, Pastor Boyd. Appreciate your being with us. Senior Minister, First AME of Los Angeles, coming up on its 150-year anniversary just a couple of years from now. That's Pastor J. Edgar Boyd. We'll be talking with African-American listeners as well as community leaders and pastors to share their observations and the variety of impressions and feelings that they take from the events of the past several days. You're listening to Air Talk on 89.3 KPCC. Back in 90 seconds. You're listening to Air Talk on 89.3 KPCC. I'm Larry Mantle. Gabri tweets at Air Talk, "I'm sick of looting being called violence and pretending like the rage we're feeling has nothing to do with the eruption of destruction and looting that occurred. You wouldn't be giving this much attention to the issue without the looting taking place." Gabri, I would take major issue with that. In fact, we've had series of marches for women's rights, for immigrants' rights here in Los Angeles that haven't involved looting or violent activity that's gone back and forth between law enforcement and participants. And we did it for days on end, and we talked about the issues that are raised. So I understand that's your perception, but I think if you go back, you look at the archives of Air Talk programs, you would find that not to be the case. 866-893-KPECC or the Air Talk page, kpecc.org. Talk with writer, novelist Jervy Tervelon of Altadena. Jervy has been with the program for many, many years, going way back. Jervy, always good to hear from you. Thanks for calling.
Thank you, Larry.
So share with us, because you wrote about going way back to 1992. What's your perspective on what we're going through now?
Well, I think it's even worse because of the economic situation we're also in with the coronavirus. It just exacerbates everything. And, you know, and really the fact that of having a president who seems to be hostile to people of color in general, and specifically black people. And it's a frightening situation, but I also think that I'm optimistic that when we get through this, the country will change in a positive manner.
And what do you think, Jervy, gets us through this? Because there were certainly reforms in the LAPD coming out of 1992, but nevertheless, friction between communities of color and the police continued, if not as intensely as they were the pre-Rodney King beating. But what does it take for there to be improvement now?
I think that the consensus is going to be that we need community policing, and that we need to demilitarize the police. We do have a lot of guns on the street. We do need to have effective police that can handle situations where you have that kind of gunfire. But maintaining public order and increasing safety and all that, I think we can do that without having a militarized police.
What would that community policing look like?
I think it has to come from within the community. You have to have police that know the community, to work in the community, and feel comfortable in the community. I mean, if there's just... and also the fact that you never see foot patrol, you never see police interacting in the community in the way that, you know, goes on in other countries. You know, my wife's Chinese, and, you know, you go to, in China, the police are not omnipresent. the military police are frightening, but the police that you see on a day-to-day basis, they're just part of the community.
Jervie, how would you deal with the volume of calls? Because the calls for service that you have in a city like Los Angeles, it's, you know, tens of thousands. How would you respond to calls like that in the community policing model that you're describing?
You know, Larry, I'm not sure, but I know that it's going to take a tremendous kind of investment in trying to create community policing that would be effective. And, you know, to some extent, you know, we're going to have to increase taxes on certain things, and maybe we'll need to increase taxes on guns. And I'm not saying that people shouldn't be able to possess a gun, but, you know, guns are at the root of all this because the police are fearful because they don't know if you're armed. We know the police are armed, so every time I ever see a police officer, I dangle my hands out of the car, and I was told to take my license out, too, and cross my hands, and that would probably protect me from someone thinking that I might be doing something aggressive.
Don't you think, though, Jervie, that if you demilitarized the police, that, I mean, given what we see with people buying guns right now because they're concerned police can't protect them, don't you think the number of people armed would go up significantly?
Well, I'm not saying that you don't need to have police that are capable of handling situations where guns are involved. What I'm saying is that if you have community policing, the people that police, we have enough police that really know the community and work within a community, I think that would diffuse some of the tensions that we have now. I mean, we have drive-by police, and there's certain areas in Altadena and Pasadena where we know the crime is higher, so they patrol those areas more, which just seems, you know, seems reasonable. But we do need to figure out how to de-escalate the situation where the police are thought of as being kind of an occupying force as opposed to being part of the community.
So what I'm hearing you say is if you had community-based policing that was in the community, on the streets, developed relationships with people, that would lower crime, people would become more compliant with the law if you did that. And so you wouldn't need as robust the traditional police response. Am I hearing you correctly?
Yes, I think it would lead to more effective policing if they actually were part of the community. And, you know, in Altadena, there are sheriffs that seem to know the community better than others. But the way it is now, you can just see this escalation. And the other thing is about the guns. Larry, I've had guns pointed at me five or six times, and I never thought that having a gun would make me safer. Having a gun gives you a false sense of security. If somebody's breaking your house and you know they're coming, sure, a gun might be effective. But in my life, and I'm 61 now, Larry, I've never had that situation happen where I've had guns pointed at me. Was fairly casually walking down the street. Somebody decides to ask me for money, or sometimes it happens in a joking fashion. They're just, you know,
some joke with a gun, Jervie. Hey, Jervie, I need to take other calls, but I, as always, I really appreciate your joining us and sharing your perspective, particularly as a man who's observed so much here in Southern California over the decades. You and I are the exact same age, so thank you.
We appreciate it.
All right, Jervie Tervelon, noted novelist and writer. In fact, I think Jervie talked with us probably going back to 1992, sharing his impressions of the events at that time. Also with us on Air Talk, the Reverend Najuma Smith Pollard, pastor and program manager of the Cecil Murray Center for Community Engagement at the University of Southern California, which, by the way, is going back to in-person classes in the fall. We'll talk about that later on the program. Thank you, Pastor Smith Pollard, for being with us again. Your perceptions about the mix of feelings that you're perhaps experiencing today?
I think, well, today, a lot of people are taking a step back and now beginning to, and not now, but thinking about where do we go from here? You know, there's still some protesting that is happening and needs to still happen. Certainly we don't, those who are about the righteous protests for justice and reform and systematic and institutional changes are not part of the looting that we've seen happening. And that message, and it's even good to hear, even in media, is being said more and more that there are different groups. There are people that are peacefully protesting, that are getting their message out, and then there are other groups of people that are all about creating mayhem. And it's good that we are at a turning point where that message is being shared more and more and getting out there loud, so we can get back to the core message, which is about racism in America and how that works, you know, in the various institutions of our country. At this point, the focus is on police brutality, and that's the right protest. And so that, you know, that's the tone that I'm hearing when I'm talking to people, is that it's like, okay, let, you know, keep the energy going around that conversation. Let's stay on that conversation. Yes.
Pastor, I was just going to ask, we're just a few days away from Sunday services. And what's your sense from, you know, talking with your colleagues, other people who are clerics, how they're planning to talk about this and to whether it's opening dialogue or providing some sort of comfort to their congregations?
I think right now the tone is about maintaining focus. Right now it's about maintaining focus on the core issues and those that have the opportunity to organize and meet with officials. It's about staying focused. It's too soon to talk about a kumbaya healing moment, but we have to stay, that people are staying vigilant and staying focused. And for clergy, as a pastor myself, it's the same. It's about reminding the membership to stay focused on the core message. And for those, I have members that are protesting and I have some that are not. But it's about staying focused on the core issue for Black America, which is we must continue to push and push and push for racism to be dismantled in this country and the ways that it affects us on a day-to-day basis through law enforcement, through the judicial system, and so on, and through the healthcare system, and so on and so forth. This is, and I agree with Pastor Boyd, this is a pivotal moment. And the what you do in a pivotal moment is you stay focused on the pivot and where you're trying to go.
We're talking with Reverend Najuma Smith-Pollard, pastor and program manager of the Cecil Murray Center for Community Engagement at USC. We're going to continue with her. We also have Brent in Altadena who will be joining us. We're talking with African-American listeners and with community leaders to hear their thoughts now several days into a series of protests. Past couple of days and nights have been largely without the kinds of property damage or crimes of looting that we had previously. And there have been very, very large protests that have taken place outside Mayor Eric Garcetti's house, in multiple locations in Hollywood, and in downtown Los Angeles. We'll be back in just 1 minute. You're listening to Air Talk on 89.3 KPECC. I'm Larry Mantle. Yesterday, we talked with L.A. County District Attorney Jackie Lacey. Coming up next hour, we talk with her challenger for the DA's office, George Gascon. Will be with us, a former assistant chief of the LAPD, went on to head other police departments, including San Francisco, and then for 8 years was the district attorney of San Francisco. We'll talk with him coming up next hour, George Gascon, right here on 89.3 KPECC. We're talking with Reverend Najuma Smith-Pollard of USC, where she's program manager of the Cecil Murray Center for Community Engagement. She's a pastor as well. Pastor Smith-Pollard, before I let you go, I did want to ask you about generational differences. One of the things I recall in the extensive programming that we did surrounding 1992 was to hear about some of the intergenerational conversations that were taking place among African Americans surrounding Rodney King. And I wonder if you have any insight that you can share as to any generational differences or new commonalities that have come out of this?
I mean, certainly there's some generational challenges going on, especially when you think about about technology and how the social media spaces are creating this new kind of generational gap. However, and so that's the core difference right now. That's a big difference in that the issue hasn't changed. I mean, you know, we've seen some progress, but where there's a huge difference now is the way in which young people, young adults are getting their message across using this social media platform. It didn't exist in 1992. I remember being at FAME as a member there, and I'm, you know, a daughter of Chip Murray, and not biological, but spiritual daughter of Chip Murray. And I want to clear that up. And so everything was, you know, the communication was different. But now you're able to get a message out with one tweet or with one. So I think that's the huge difference. And where there's opportunity is for our young, for those who are of an older generation to learn how this new generation is communicating and how their messaging is being spread, especially in the social media space. But there's also opportunity for the younger generation to learn from those who have been at this work a long time, several decades, because what our older leaders teach us is stamina and momentum and how not to give up and how to keep pressing forward. And so that's what those persons like Dr. Murray and others, that's what they can teach us, is patience in this process, because change takes time, and how to maintain momentum and how to go the long haul. This is not a sprint, you know, this is a marathon. And so that's what we can learn from our legacy leaders. And then what younger generation has to offer is the way of this new methodology of protest using social media. Yeah.
I want to thank you so much again for being with us, Reverend Najuma. We appreciate it and look forward to talking with you again soon. Thank you.
Absolutely. Have a great day.
Thank you. We appreciate it. From USC, where she is the program manager of the Cecil Murray Center for Community Engagement, Pastor Najuma Smith-Pollard with us on Air Talk. Brent and Altadena, you've been waiting patiently, and I'm sorry, I've got like 30 seconds, but please share your comment with us.
Absolutely. I just want to say that what we're seeing here is a collision of two types of violence against the African-American community. The first is the lynching that we saw, which is just a straight physical kind of violence. But the economic violence of disenfranchisement, and especially with African-Americans with criminal records being removed from their ability to use FAFSA, their ability to participate in the political system, get professional licenses, get a job, that long-term violence are two different things that we're seeing happening at the same time. And so the reaction of looting is sort of like the reaction to a lynching. The reaction of protest is more like the reaction to the long-term elements that I discussed. And so, you know, we can't conflate these two and treat peaceful protesters as though they're reacting to a lynching. But we also can't discount why people are reacting the way they do to a lynching.
Brent, I appreciate your call. That's Brent in Altadena with us on Air Talk. We have much more to come in the second hour. I'll be telling you about it momentarily.